So I think the goal this week is going to be, we'll review a little bit, because we did the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph last time. So we'll briefly review that, and then we'll go through Perek Yud Aleph. Exciting, good, happy Perek, right? It's shuttles like one moment in the sun before everything starts to go downhill. So we're going to enjoy it. The weather right now, at least we should have, at least safer, the safer Shmuel part at least should be good. You know, it's going to be like 2 degrees for the next whatever. Yeah, I made the mistake of telling people it's not so cold in Chicago. So I will not do that again. All right. Let's load up the...
So it's all your fault that it got cold. Is that what you're telling us?
Exactly. Call me. I apologize.
Okay, we know who to blame now.
Exactly. So, what we started last week was the battle between, or the beginning of the battle between Shaul and Amon. Shaul was crowned king. He had his like failed coronation at the end of Perek Yud. We saw the Bnei Blial, the people with no yoke. That very important term that came up a couple of times in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel with Chana and with Bnei Eli. They didn't accept Shaul's reign, and Shaul didn't really seem to act like a king. I mean, he goes back and he goes home. You know, he's a king on paper, but he's not actually behaving like a king. It sounds like that transformation that we hoped for, that had been so central to the prophetic messages that Shmuel had given Shaul, and the signs that he had seen, which had been all about Shaul's potential for transformation, had not yet been actualized at the end of Perek Yud. He's been crowned as a king, but he still is behaving as just the same shy, quiet, private citizen, passive personality that we had when we first met Shaul in Perek Tes. So then Perek Yud Aleph, things came to a head very quickly, because all of a sudden Nachash, the king of Ammon, is attacking Yavesh Gilad, this isolated town on the other side of the Jordan River. And we saw the Malbim's very compelling explanation. The Malbim said that it was not a coincidence that now is the time that Nachash is attacking, and that he's specifically attacking Yavesh Gilad, because Amon's goal right now, this, you know, the king Nachash's goal, is to snuff the monarchy in its crib. He wants to end this potential threat, because the worst thing, if you're Ammon and Moab, the same problem that Balak, you know, the king of Moab, dealt with in Sefer Bamidbar, Nachash, the king of Ammon, has to deal with now. The prospect of a unified Bnei Yisrael is very, very threatening to Ammon. So the prospect of them becoming one unified monarchy, he wants to take action against. What is he going to do? He'll target Yavesh Gilad, which is, not only are they a vulnerable town, but it is a perfect political trap for Shaul, because Yavesh Gilad, they are presumably, says the Malbim, the descendants of people from Shevet Binyamin, because those were the survivors of the civil war of Pilagash Begeva, who were who married the women, the women of Yavesh Gilad, and therefore presumably took over the town. So it's people on the other side of the Jordan River. They're in the boondocks. As it is, there are tensions between East and West in Bnei Yisrael, which came up several times in Sefer Shoftim. On top of that, they have no local allies, right? This is not Shevet Gad or Shevet Reuben over there. It's just this one little town of Shevet Binyamin. They have no friends nearby. And if Shaul tries to rally the whole nation to save them, so the threat is, people will look at that as just Shaul using the monarchy to pursue the narrow interests of Shevet Binyamin. So he's between a rock and a hard place. If he tries to get everyone to go to war, it looks like he's just trying to help Binyamin. And if he doesn't go to war, he's going to be exposed as a weakling. And the whole idea of Melucha, that it's supposed to, you know, provide national security, is going to be exposed as not working right from the get-go. So that was the Malbim's whole theory. Very, very compelling. I really understand why now is the time that Nachash makes his attack, why he specifically attacks Yavesh Gilad. And the Dat Mikra commentary pointed out, in addition to this, that this explains the very strange demand that he made of the people of Yavesh Gilead, which was to pierce out your right eye, right? The Ein Yamin. So Dan Mikra just points out, yeah, it's because the whole reference here is that these are members of Shevet Binyamin, right? These are you'd say they are Anshe Yamin, Ish Yimini, is how the Navi refers to people of Binyamin. So the way to drive home that we're targeting Binyamin is by saying we're going to take out their right eye. And this also explained that thing we were asking as soon as we saw the Pasuk, which was, wait a second, if you attack Yavesh Gilead and you have them cornered and surrounded and outnumbered and they're at your mercy, and then they tell you, give us a week and see if we can rally, you know, the rest of Bnei Yisrael to our cause, you'd be crazy to take them up on the offer. You have them down. Why are you giving them a week to try to bring reinforcements? But the answer was, the whole point, that's exactly what Nachash's goal was. They will reach out to Shaul. Shaul will be stuck and the monarchy is going to fall apart. So that was the strategy. That was the plan. We saw the map, right? Here's Yavesh Gilead all the way here on the other side of the Jordan River. Here's Giva, which is where Shaul is living, right? Givat Shaul. Another reference to the battle, you know, Pilegesh Begiba, this great, terrible civil war involving Yavesh Gilead, is going to come up. References to it will come up a number of times in the story. And just putting the cards on the table now, the whole reason for that is going to be that Shaul's victory here is going to be the ultimate tikkun of the disaster of Pilegesh Begiba. The unified monarchy in this parak is going to redeem and undo the damage of Pilegesh Begiva, which has been the battle that we've seen the people have been dealing with throughout Sefer Shmuel. We saw Chana dealing with the spiritual consequences of Pilegesh Begiva and the ethical destruction over there. We saw Shmuel in his battle doing that as well. And now Shaul is really going to put a capstone on it. Right. So just to get to where we were up to, we were in the middle of unpacking the Pasuk Zion. There's a whole lot to do with this Pasuk, so we're going to have to spend a few minutes on it. This is absolutely essential. Navi says in Pasuk Zion, Vayikach Tzemed Bakar, so Shaul, he's out in the fields, right? He's still behaving as a private citizen. He's a farmer with his, he's plowing the ground with his oxen. So here's what happened. The Navi said Shaul reacted with fury. I'm just going to scroll up for 1 second to get the exact language. Vayichar apo me'od, right? He was enraged. And we saw the contrast with Eli. Both Shaul and Eli are the last people in the whole town to hear the news. But when Eli heard the news, he fell backwards and died. And then Shaul finds out the news. He's enraged and he jumps to action. What does he do? Navi says, Vayikach tzemed bakar, he takes a yoke of oxen, right? He's using his oxen to plow his field. So immediately he takes the oxen. Vaynatchehu, he cuts them up. Vayishalach b'chol gvul Yisrael. So he takes pieces of the oxen. You know, my brother was visiting a couple weeks ago, so he went to Romania and he got a few salamis to stick in his bag to bring to friends in New York, right? So Shaul is doing something a little bit similar, just, you know, for different reasons, right? He's also packing up salami from his oxen, sending it around the country. But why is he doing that? Yadam alachim lemor, asher inenu yotzei acharei Shaul v'achar Shmuel. Anyone who doesn't go after Shaul and Shmuel, ko ye'aseh livkaro. We are going to slice up his oxen. Vayipol pach ad Hashem al ha'am, the fear of God fell on the nation. So we need to unpack this pasuk. The last thing we did last week was we made one point from this pasuk, which was to note what is the fear that is being triggered. And this is an immense positive, right? That it's not the fear of Shaul. It's not the fear of the king. The Tzitzit points this out. It's the pachad Hashem, right? It's the fear of Hashem that's falling out on the people. Shmuel's whole fear that the people were going to replace Hashem, Melech Malchi Hamlachim, with a Melech Basar V'dam, is being shown here that that is not necessarily the case. We can have our cake and eat it too. We can have a strong, vigorous, energetic king whose policies are creating more Yiras Shamayim among the people. They get this inspired, intense message from the king coming from a deep place of Avas Yisrael and Yiras Shamayim, and it has its impact. It registers. They fear Hashem. They come out because of the fear of Hashem. That was piece number one. Now, there's so much more going on in this pasuk. Let's note, who does Shaul say is supposed to come? Who are you following? So Shaul said, you're not just following me, you're also following Shmuel. Asher neinu yotzei acharei Shaul v'achar Shmuel. So the Radak notes this. And the Radak asks, why did Shaul need to mention Shmuel? That you're not just following me, you're also following Shmuel. The Radak argues that this shows that Shaul has not yet been completely accepted as a king. It dovetails with a couple of other comments that the Radak has in Parakut Aleph. He says the people who were not going to follow Shaul, so they also should follow Shmuel. Right? If you're not a loyalist to the monarch, well, at least hopefully you'll be a loyalist to the prophet. So that is very possible. But we also should note something else, which is, who does Shaul mention first? And he says, Acharei Shaul v'achar Shmuel. So Shaul is actually going a long way from the passive, hesitant personality of Parak Tes, who didn't even refer to Shmuel by name. He just referred to him as the Ro'eh. We then noted that began to change. Parak Yud, he meets his uncle, and he mentions Shmuel by name. But here he's actually putting himself first. So in a way, you could really read this as a very positive moment where Shaul and Shmuel are aligned, and the king is not replacing the Navi. Shaul is making very clear that it's the two of them together. They're operating in tandem. We're not replacing Shmuel. All of Shmuel's fears in Parakhas that he's being replaced. And Hashem tells Shmuel, it's not you that they were Mo'ace. They didn't reject you, they rejected me. Shaul is saying no rejection. Shmuel is still very involved. Right? At the same time, Shaul is also showing his leadership here. He's with Shmuel. He's also putting himself first.
Can we just mention that there's another case of cutting up and sending out pieces to all the Shvatim and saying at the end of Shoftim, Ephilas Rehivah, come with me? So this is sort of correcting what was done previously.
For sure. So let's talk about that for a minute or a couple minutes, because this is essential, right? What is behind the symbolism of sending out, of cutting up the oxen and sending them out? So right away, 100%, I think Daniela mentioned last week, thinking about Bris Bein HaBesarim as one example, maybe thinking of this as like a new covenant that's being created. But another one is what we had. I don't want to skip all the way down, right? But right, we'll get there in a second. Was what happened in Pileges Begiva, where the Ish Levi took a ma'achales, which we saw, right? That's the term that's used for the knife from Akedas Yitzchak, but the whole thing was a work Akedas Yitzchak, and he cut up his deceased Pileges, and he sent body parts of his wife all around the country to bring the people together. So Shaul's action here is very, very similar to that. He's cutting up and sending things out to bring people together. At the same time, you can't miss the fact that Shaul is not cutting up a person. He is cutting up oxen. And in fact, it's really interesting. I might have thought that what would Shaul's warning be? Anyone who doesn't report to military duty, the king summons you to serve. I would have thought that it might be capital punishment. If you don't come to the yard, if you desert, we're going to kill you. It's interesting that that's not what Shaul says. Shaul says, someone who doesn't come, we're going to cut up his oxen. Right? There's a deep awareness of the civil war history that we had. And not only are we here cutting up oxen instead of people, but we're not even threatening, we're not even going to threaten murder, even though Shaul could have done that. It's Mori B'Malchus to ignore the summons of the king. But Shaul doesn't do that. He cuts up the oxen. He says to come. And to also drive home that this is referring to a callback to Pelegesh Begiva. So we'll look at this. But the Navi says that they all came ki ish echad. They all came as one man. That line of ish echad comes up repeatedly in the story of Pelegesh Begiva. There, it's a tragic, cynical line, because after all of Sefer Shoftim, which is all of the tribes are divided, they finally come together in Pelegesh Begiva, but they came together in the cause of civil war and massacring the Shevet Binyamin. Right? It was a mockery of unity. So here you have the dramatic echo of the message, the symbolism of cutting up the ox and ki ish echad. But it's all being done for the right way. Right? It's like the exact, it's super similar, but the exact opposite. The Malbim notes this. The Malbim says, what's the symbolism of the cut up oxen? So he says, basically, that's the same thing as Benjamin Franklin's, you know, famous cartoon, right? The cut up ox means join or die. If the Shvatim do not unite, then they will all fail. That's the exact challenge that the Malbim had said was Nachash's whole strategy. Nachash, no pun intended, that the king of Ammon was a snake. And the cartoon here is also a snake. Okay, it just happens to be that way. But the Malbim had said that the whole strategy of the king of Ammon was to prevent the tribes from coming together. Yeah, Shaul, oh, you're going to try to get us together just to protect one little isolated outpost of Shevet and Yamin? So the way that Shaul responds to that is with symbolism that gives people the message, if we do not unite, we will be a bunch of dissected oxen, right? What does he say over here? Lo tachul ruach v'rav v'chayi ha'am ha'medinim, rap yotam tzmudim yachad. We need to unite if we are going to survive in this world, right? Lo kein nim yisparduh heim kinitchei bas ha'abakar. We have no chance if we each shave that goes its own way, right? You have the foreleg of the ox. Good luck plowing a field, you know, with the leg of an ox that you got in the mail from Shaul. We need to unite. So there's all this, right? Is the callback to Pelegesh Begiva, but for the right reason. There is an avoidance of civil war. There's the reference to Shmuel. Shmuel still is being involved and very involved. One second. Yeah, right here you have right the Ish Levi takes the Machalas. He took his wife. Remember, we pointed this out at the time in the beginning of we began learning Shmuel. We saw this, that the way the Navi even described the way that the Ish Levi cuts up his Pelegesh, the Navi never even clearly said she was dead. The Navi even gives the implication that he's murdering his Pelegesh. It's not actually true. She died in Giva, but the Navi like goes out of its way to make the description as grotesque and macabre as possible. He went home, he took the knife, he cut her up. Right? It makes it sound like murder because man is so detached from like basic covenant brios with what he decides to use as a symbol to bring everyone together. Shaul not going in that direction. Right? And you see here just three examples of Ish Echad in the story of Pelegesh Begiva. Kol b'nei Yisrael, they all united, ki ish echad, l'midan v'ad b'er-sheva, north to south, they all came together. There it's a Gilad, even west, you know, they all, east of the Jordan River. The first time in Sefer Shoftim that Jews from the Jordan River joined together with Jews on the other side is civil war. Vayakam kol ha'am ki ish echad, the whole nation came together as one man. They say kol ish Yisrael ki ish echad, chaverim. They're buddies. They're together. One man. It's a joke in Sefer Shoftim. The Ish Echad of Sefer Shmuel is undoing all that. Shaul, descendant of Binyamin, the tribe that had the original sin of Pelegesh Begiva, the tribe that was decimated at Pelegesh Begiva. So here it's one of those descendants. It's so powerful to imagine. You know, Shevet Binyamin had those 600 survivors from the war. Well, one of their descendants now is Shaul, who now is being established as a king over the whole nation. And he once again is reuniting everyone at that same place in Giva. But here it's to save the small, vulnerable part of Am Yisrael from an outside enemy, rather than what they did in Shoftim, which was to attack one of their own tribes. One last point on this is, if we think about Shaul's transformation. So Shaul, at the beginning of the parak, we meet, and he still comes off as a private citizen. He's still a farmer in the field. When Shaul takes his oxen and cuts them up, so there's another important moment here, which is Shaul is now transforming, really, from using his oxen in his personal capacity to plow his fields to using them in a national capacity to bring the people together. That line that when the Malbim explained, when the Navi said about Shaul, "Vayafoch lo lev acher," that Shaul will be given a new heart. And the Malbim said, I'll tell you what that means. That means that the heart of a king is no longer focused on the individual, but it's focused on the whole nation. The same way that the heart is responsible for bringing blood to the whole body, so the king has the responsibility for the whole Sheva. So that moment is happening here as well. When Shaul is cutting up his oxen, that is also a moment of his personal transformation, going from private farmer Shaul to the king, statesman, nationalist Shaul. So that's all that is happening here in this one pasuk. Okay, so let's go on and see what he does. So they all came together. Pasuk Ches, we're told, "Vayifkedim beBazek." Okay, seems like a place called Bazek. "Vayu bnei Yisrael shalosh meos aleph," 300,000 bnei Yisrael. "Ve'ish Yehuda shloshim aleph," 30,000 people from the tribe of Yehuda. Now, right away, you have to ask, why are the members of the tribe of Yehuda being mentioned separately? Right? It should have just said the army was 330,000 Jews. Why do we mention 300,000 from Yisrael and 30,000 from Yehuda? And if we do the math for a second, it doesn't sound like there are more people from Yehuda than anyone else, right? Proportionally, if they're, the other tribes have 300,000 and Yehuda has 30,000, it sounds basically proportionate. So why are they singled out? So this could be for one of two reasons, but I'll argue for one of them. You could say that this is a sign of danger, that maybe Yehuda is not fully on board, they're not fully united. We know what's going to happen in Jewish history. We know Bias Rishon, Yehuda and Yisrael are not going to stick together. We're going to have the two kingdoms. But I think it's more likely that we want to talk about Yehuda for a different reason. Let's recall, if you want to say that they're not really unified, well, one pasuk earlier, the Navi said they all came ki ish echad. Everyone is totally together. So why might we want to highlight Yehuda's involvement in the battle? Well, it's very simple. Let's look back again at the story of Pilegesh Begeva. All the tribes unite. They all come to Beisel. They go to the Kohen Gadol. They go to Urim Tumim, and they ask, who should lead the battle? And Hashem says, Yehuda Batchila. Yehuda should lead the battle against Binyamin, which is a total derivation of Yehuda's whole legacy, going back to Yehuda and Binyamin in Parshas Vayigash in front of Yosef in Mitzrayim. Yehuda always had been the protector of Binyamin. Here, where everything is turned upside down, Pilegesh Begeva, Yehuda is leading the fight against Binyamin. So I think the reason why the Navi might want to highlight Yehuda's role in the battle is to drive home, this is the exact opposite. Once again, we are redeeming the story of Pilegesh Begeva. We're going to Yavish Gilad. We're going to save these members of Binyamin. The whole nation is united. And who's leading the charge? We've got 30,000 men from Yehuda, right? Their role is highlighted here to show that they're doing the exact opposite thing that they did in the Battle of Pelagius from Yemen. Okay. So then Pasuk Tess, so the whole army is united, right? Remember the scene? We have Yabesh Gilad out over there, isolated, surrounded by Ammon. They got a week. So, you know, over on the other side of the Jordan River, armies are uniting. You can, like, hear the pump-up music. You know, as everyone's coming together, save the day. So, Pasuk Tess, so they said to the messengers, who's they? Who's the they who said to the messengers? Well, probably Shmuel and Shaul, right? The people who were leading the charge of Pasuk Zion. Probably Shmuel and Shaul are saying together to the messengers, Kosom run le'ish Yavesh Gilad. Thus shall you say to the members of Yavesh Gilad, Machar tie lachem teshua kichom hashemesh. You will have your salvation by the heat of the day tomorrow. They got the message and they rejoiced. What's interesting about this pasuk is that if you think about the tone of it, Kosom run, here is what you shall say, tomorrow you shall have your redemption, that really sounds like that sounds like divrei nevuah. Doesn't it have a prophetic tone? We say ko somar. You often the Navi have that, right? The Navi says, ko somar Hashem. Here's what I say. Sefer Shmos, that happened a bunch of times where Hashem says to Moshe, ko somru l'bnei Yisrael, here's what we're going to do. Here's what's going to happen tomorrow. I am telling the future. I am telling you when the redemption is going to come. But this is Shmuel and Shaul talking, and the tone is a tone of nevuah. Well, that's very exciting because remember we saw in Parak Tess and Yud that Shaul's ultimate, the highest level he can reach, the ultimate goal, would be for him to not just settle for being a melech, but Shaul could have been a melech and a navi, and in fact he had nevuah. He did give prophecy in Parak Yud, so. That might be another hint of that over here. Shaul and Shmuel united together and even speaking in prophetic tongue. So the people of Anshe of Yavesh Gilad get the message. We can imagine they are ecstatic, right? They were dreading the fact they were all going to be mutilated and destroyed. So then you have a funny pasuk, Pasuk Yud. Pasuk says, Vayemnu Anshe Yavesh, Machar neitze alechem. Tomorrow we'll go out to you. Vasisam lanu keholato beneichem. And you'll do whatever you want, whatever is good in your eyes. So it sounds like it's talking to these messengers, but it doesn't make any sense because the messengers are Jewish messengers saying we're going to save you. So what's going on here? So Mitzudas David explains that once the members of Yavesh Gilad got the message, tomorrow the armies are coming, they're going to save you. So Mesudas David says, they now help to set a trap for Ammon. They tell the army of Ammon, remember, surrounding them, tomorrow we're going to surrender, and you can do to us, kechol hatov be'ineichem, right? In your eyes. You're going to poke at our eyes. Do whatever is right of us in your eyes. So they're giving a false sense of confidence and security to the people, to the tribe of Ammon, right? You know, they can let down their guard because they're being let known that tomorrow the surrender is going to take place. So that's a strategy, setting up the army of Ammon to be ambushed because they slacken, they relax their guard. They do not think reinforcements are going to come. They think there's going to be a surrender tomorrow. And that sets up Pasuk Yud Aleph. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vahimi Macharas, I was on the next day. Vayasem Shaul Esa'am Shlosha Roshim. Shaul divides up the nation into three columns. Vayavo Besocha Machaneh Bashmoras HaBoker. They crashed into the camp at the morning watch. That's right before the dawn. Vayaku Esamon Adchom Hayom. Sure enough, they struck Amon from dawn until midday. The remnant scattered, and there were not even two people left together. That's the degree to which they were scattered. The first, first message from the pasuk, Baruch Hashem, total victory, total redemption. But if we dig, we can reveal a little bit more and be more impressed with Shaul's leadership here and pick up on a couple of other things that the Navi is doing. First, let's appreciate the military difficulty of pulling this off. What is Shaul doing? He's splitting up his army into three columns so that they can surround Ammon, right? We're not just going to hit him from one side. We're going to hit them from three sides and coordinating it so that the three columns all converge simultaneously. And they specifically do that at the optimal moment for an ambush, which is right before the dawn, at the end of the night, when the, you know, the guard is at its absolute minimum. You know, all night long, they're waiting for a battle, waiting for an ambush, right before the dawn. That's always when an army is most vulnerable to attack. So Shaul has such effective leadership of his army that he's able to coordinate three different columns, getting them to march together, getting them to show up at the same time, at the perfect time. That's piece number one. Now, this technique, this strategy of dividing one's army into three columns has shown up previously in the Navi. That was the strategy of Gideon, who is a person we've mentioned before. He's going to come up again later on in the Navi. It's going to be very, very important to think the Navi is going to hold up Gideon next to Shaul. And for good reason, because both of these, you know, Gideon was the top military hero of Sefer Shoftim. He also was somebody who was offered the kingship and declined it. And that's exactly what Gideon had done in his surprise against Midian. His night ambush was also taking his army and splitting them up into three columns and having the three columns strike at exactly the same time. But the comparison only highlights how impressive Shaul's accomplishment is. Shaul outshines Gideon as a general because Gideon had to coordinate three columns of 300 men. That's not, you know, it's difficult, but like it's not the hardest thing in the world to have one group of 100, two groups of 100, three groups of 100. You can do that, right? When I was in camp and we had, you know, color war, we had the Grand March. So we had, you know, probably like 150 kids on our team. They had to get to all march where they're supposed to go at the same time. You can do it with 300 people, right? It's not like impossible. To get 300,000 people, 100,000 people per column, to get them coordinated is much more difficult. So the Navi is comparing Gideon, Shaul to Gideon in a good way, but we're even more impressed with the unity and the cohesion and the control that Shaul is able to demonstrate as a leader and as a general. And one more point that emerges from the pasuk here, the description of Shaul's victory. The pasuk at the end was a little bit wordy, wasn't it? Yeah, it took a long time for the Navi to say that they really beat up on Ammon. By Yaku es Ammon, they struck Ammon ad chom hayom. That's all we have to say, right? All we have to say is that they beat Ammon all day long. And then if you wanted, you could have said, you know, there was no one left. But it goes on and on. By Hiya Nisharim, there were some remnants. So they beat him up. There were some remnants, by Hiya Nisharim, by Afutsu. And the remnants scattered. The Lo Nisharu Bam Shtaim Yachad. And there was not even left two people together. Why do you say that so many times? The reason probably is because there's a very dramatic contrast that's being set up. The Ammonites are being scattered. At the end, you don't even have two people together, right? At the end of the battle, every single Ammonite is for himself. Every surviving soldier is an individual. And that's the dramatic contrast with what Shaul has managed to pull off, which is by he, right? All Bnei Israel were ki'ish achad. So the unity, which is the whole theme of the parak, the unity that you can have with an effective monarchy, which is instilling Pachad Hashem. The unity that Shaul is able to instill is what's being contrasted with the end result for the enemies. The enemies, Ammon, is being scattered until you don't even have two people together. Lo nisharu bo shnayim yachad. Ammon's goal was to divide Bnei Yisrael. That was Nachash's strategy, prevent the malchus from coming together. Instead, it's the exact opposite. It is the spur to trigger the unification of the people under Shaul's leadership and Shmuel's leadership. And at the same time, right, it is Ammon who are left with not even one man, with not even two people left together. Okay, so that then takes us, and this is awesome. Isn't this fun? This is like, you know, such good. This is so good. Shaul's winning, but they saw it together. There's Yerushalayim. Like, we just have to enjoy this. You know, Sefer Shmuel is so complicated. Like, the moments where it's just unadulterated, pure goodness, like, you know, sit for a minute and enjoy. Okay. So, four more seconds to close out the parak. So the Navi then says, Vayomer ha'amel Shmuel. So now the people go to Shmuel. Why are they going to Shmuel? And they say, Mi ha'omer Shaul yimloch aleinu tenu ha'anashim u'misein. Who were those people who had said sarcastically, shall Shaul rule over us? Give us the people and we will kill them. So what do we think about this? Now, clearly we see Shaul's popularity because the people, you know, now all want Shaul as their king. You also could argue that the people deserve to die because they were Moreid b'malchus. At the same time, it's a very troubling line. It almost sounds like a mob reaction. Give us the people and we will kill them. It is not the job of the Am to put the people to death. Right? It's very nice that they ask Shmuel, but there are almost like troubling shades here of Pilegesh Begeva, where you have the mob coming together. So, okay, they ask Shmuel and they ask the Shaila. Now, what should happen? You'd think that Shmuel would answer the Shaila. The interesting is that he doesn't. Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Shaul. Shaul jumps in. Right? They ask Shmuel the question, and Shaul jumps in, and Shaul says, this is not a question for the Navi, because this isn't a question in Shulchan Aruch. Right? This isn't a question of Choshen Mishpat, or there's not Halachah Shabbos. This is a question, this is a halachic question that pertains to the monarchy. It is the king's job to answer this question, what to do with someone who is Moreid b'Malchus. So Shaul is asserting himself, but in a proper channel. He is the one who should be answering this question. Now, what does Shaul say? It's interesting because we could evaluate it in one of two ways. I'll argue for the better one. He says, Lo yumas ish bayom hazeh. No man shall be put to death today. Ki hayom asa Hashem tshuva b'Yisrael. This is the day that Hashem has made a redemption for Israel. Now, you could read that line and be very nervous because you could say this is passive Shaul. Shaul not being able to lead, reasserting himself. Here we have people who were rebellious, Moreid b'Malchus, and Shaul should have taken the opportunity to demonstrate there are consequences for rebelling against the king. The king has to be respected. They should die. Shaul gives mercy, and we know when Shaul is going to fight Amalek, Shaul will have a problem giving out mercy when that was not the appropriate thing to do. So you could look at this and be alarmed by this passage. But at the same time, I think it makes more sense to be view this very, very positively. For one, look at the next passage. The next passage, Shmuel now speaks up. Right, let's go to Gilgal, which we'll talk about in 2 minutes, and let's renew the monarchy. So Shmuel clearly is ecstatic. Now Shmuel listens to what Shaul said, and Shmuel, he's like bursting with nachas. He hears that line, says, let's go renew the monarchy. He seems to love the line that Shaul has. It's a moment of rachamim, which seems to be the appropriate moment of rachamim. And it makes sense, because you can imagine those people, the B'nai Belial, who had rejected Shaul and Perek Yud, where do they stand now after the victory? Surely they're going to be loyal subjects. There's no need. The reason to kill people in Moreid b'Malchus, you need to make an example of people to instill the awe of the monarch. But that's already been accomplished. The victory has done that. Shaul is able to show rachamim here because he's in a place of strength. He's in a place where he already has won the respect of the people. And now he has the ability to show rachamim. He does that. And we should note two other very important things. Number one, how does Shaul characterize the victory? Ki hayom hasa Hashem teshuva b'Yisrael. He doesn't say this is the day that Shaul brought victory, or this is the day that that Shmuel brought victory. You know, even Gidon's war cry was Lashem v'la Gidon. His army was supposed to call out, "We're fighting for Gidon and for God." And Shaul, who we were so afraid the king will replace the Ribono Shel Olam, Shaul gives all the credit to Hashem. Hashem is the one who has given us the victory, right? Despite the fact that it's the king who is sending out the oxen, and a king who is unifying the tribes, and a king who is devising the military strategy and making sure that with the three columns and the dawn, everyone's coming together at the same time. Shaul's doing a lot of work, but he gives all the credit to Hashem. Shmuel is ecstatic. And one last important piece from this pasuk is that once again, reflect back on Pelegesh Megillah. This is even another example of Shaul redeeming the legacy of Pelegesh Megillah. Because what happened over there? Remember, the people from Binyamin in the town of Giva perpetrated unbelievable atrocities to the Pelegesh Megillah. She was raped and she was basically killed. So the people from Israel all get together and they say, give us the Anashim, B'nei B'liya'al, Tenu Es Anashim B'nei B'liya'al, Asher B'giva, Umisim. Give them over to us and we will kill them. And what does Shevet Binyamin say? Shevet Binyamin says, no, we're not going to hand them over. They protect those people of Giva, and then we have civil war. Here we have the exact same thing. The people go to Shmuel and they said, give us those B'nai B'liya'al. Give us those people that we called B'nai B'liya'al who did not accept Shaul's reign, and we will kill them. Just like the people of Binyamin here protect the B'nai B'liya'al, Shaul also refuses to kill them. But for the exact opposite reason. The rachamim over here in Pelegesh Megillah, that was perverse rachamim. That was rachamim which is really cruel. That was rachamim which was protecting unreformed people. That's just going to lead to more decay and bloodshed and everything else we have in Sefer Shoftim. The mercy of Shaul, right? The situation is so similar, but the rationale is so different. You have appropriate rachamim versus inappropriate rachamim. Unity for a good reason, right? Uniting the people against Amon versus uniting the people in civil war. Everything is so similar and yet so, so, so different. Finally, so Shmuel says, let's go to Gilgal. So where is Gilgal? Gilgal, I'm going to scroll up again to the map for a second. So Gilgal is a very prominent place in Sefer Yehoshua, which we need to talk about. Right over here. Gilgal is the place where B'nai Yisrael, when they first make camp, after they cross the Jordan River, they make their camp at Gilgal. They set up, Yeshua takes 12 stones out of the Jordan River. They make a whole monument at Gilgal. The Mishkan is set up at Gilgal. So that's where they are. So you can just look at the map, you can see what happened, right? They win the battle at Yavesh Gilead over here. So now they're going to, how do they go back to Israel? Right, so they could have gone, you know, they could have just crossed the Jordan River and gone back the way that they came. But Shaul doesn't do that, right? Shmuel says, we are going to travel the Yehoshua road. They're going to go this way, and they're going to cross the Jordan River here, just exactly where Yehoshua crossed the Jordan River, and we're going to get together at Gilgal. Why are we doing that? Why are we getting together at the place where they crossed the Jordan River and Yehoshua made that camp of them? Go down to the bottom of the source sheet. Right, so the Radak is the first person to talk about this. And he says, well, you know, it's to recognize the fact that the Mishkan was there. You know, there's historical significance to that place. Okay. There's a lot more to it. Because what happens? They go to Gilgal. They crown Shaul in front of Hashem. Whether that means they brought the Aron there or the Urim Thummim there, right? Hashem is not pulling back from the people with the king. Hashem is right there. They offer shlamim sacrifices. And the Shaul and all of Israel, they're all united, they're all there, and they rejoice ad me'od. Now, Gilgal is very, very, very significant over here for a number of reasons. Number one, Gilgal, you know, the Sefer Yoshua, Parak Hey, tells us, so, you know, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, his Yartzeit is coming up, right? He passes away on Zion Adar. So, Bnei Yisrael wait a month to cross the Jordan River, and then they cross right before Pesach.
Yeah.
So they cross the Jordan River. They all do Bris Milah. They couldn't do Bris Milah because it was Pikuach Nefesh. They're in the desert. So they do Bris Milah at Gilgal. Yeshua, Hashem says, I've removed the Cherpat Mitzrayim, the reproach of Mitzrayim, and the Kol Pes Gilgal. So that's one moment of resonance, because this whole battle with Amon, so Nachash had said explicitly, I am going to place Cherpa on Bnei Yisrael. The disgrace, Cherpa, that Amon wanted was to show that we were disunited. So once again, just like Gilgal was the place where we had the Bris Milah to remove the disgrace of the legacy of Mitzrayim, once again we're going to Gilgal because we've gotten rid of the Cherpat Amon because the people have been able to come to Gilgal. Piece number two you have in Yoshua right after that is the last time we've had where the whole nation gathered together to bring a carbon shlamim. What was the carbon shlamim that they offer when they all came together? The carbon pesach, which is a form of a carbon shlamim. So that is happening here as well. A carbon shlamim, which is all about the relationship, right? That's where Hashem partakes in the carbon, we partake in the carbon. You know, we talk about Karban Pesach is coming up, but that's a whole theme of Karban Pesach, is relationship between Hashem and Am Yisrael, and that's the Karban Shlamim here as well. So we're having a national gathering at the last place where we had a national gathering with the national consumption of Karbanos. So that's piece number two. And maybe piece number three and four is that Gilgal was the place where, of course, we came into Eretz Yisrael, and now with the establishment of the monarchy, it's basically a re-entry into Israel, right? We're pressing the reset button on all of Sefer Shoftim. The whole disaster of Sefer Shoftim is being undone. Eretz Yisrael take two, right? The Shofet strategy didn't work out. We're going back to Gilgal. We're literally re-entering Eretz Yisrael. We're crossing the Jordan River again at the place where Yahushua did it. We're together as a nation. You have Yahushua's monuments right there, remembering when Hashem, split the Jordan River. And at that spot, we're re-founding the nation. And that is the great hope for the monarchy, that it can be a new look, abandoning the disgrace of Sefer Shoftim, which we just did, right? That cherpa is gone. We're together, not together in civil war against Binyamin, and not split in a bunch of different tribes. We're together under Hashem's leadership. That's piece number three, right? So we pick Gilgal for the residence of the cherpa, for the residence of the Mishkan, the residence of coming into Eretz Yisrael. And maybe just one last suggestion. This is total speculation, but the Gilgal was also the place that cemented Yehoshua's transition to become the leader, right? Transitioning from Moshe. Pasuk Yudal of Yeretz Sefer Yehoshua sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Bayom Ha'u, after they came to Gilgal and crossed the Jordan River, the Navi says, Gidal Hashem es Yehoshua b'nei kol Yisrael. Vayiru oso, kashir yiru es Moshe kol yimei chayav. The people are awed by Yoshua as they have been awed by Moshe. So Gilgal is the moment of the transition of leadership from Moshe to Yehoshua. And maybe we can suggest that a very similar thing is happening at Gilgal here in Parak Yud Aleph. Because what leadership transition is happening now? Not from Moshe to Yehoshua, but from Shmuel to Shaul, right? And Shmuel, who we've seen so many times, and we're really going to come back to it next parak, is linked to Moshe and Aaron, and especially Moshe, that personality. So now we have the student, the disciple. Yehoshua is the ideal disciple in Tanakh. Shaul has the potential to be a Yehoshua. Just like Moshe, you know, Shmuel was like Moshe. So Shaul has the potential to continue on that trajectory, fill the shoes of Shmuel. We've seen Nevuah potential for him. So it's all here. The people are together. They're united. They're united for the right reasons in front of Hashem with Shmuel on board. We've seen the transformation from Shaul to individual to king, right? That transformation was possible. It's happened. Perek Yud Aleph shows us that not only did Shaul have the potential, but there even is a moment where he's able to tap into it. We see this one shining moment, what a king could be, you know, and then not even going to talk about it because this is like Shaul's Perek. So we won't talk right now about what's going to happen next. But so next week, we'll look at Shmuel's, you know, famous sign-off. We'll do like a real retrospective look at Shmuel, and then we'll go forward from there. Okay. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.